Perrin for AM 1290.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Money Talk. I'm Neil Kreisel, and Diane Duva and I are your hosts every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 11, and on Saturdays at 6. We're brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending, whose highly trained and experienced team takes great pride in helping people with home financing, offering competitive rates and a wide array of loan programs. Arnaldi's Cafe, one of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1937, located on the corner of Olive and Cota Street in downtown Santa Barbara. And Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm in Santa Barbara, providing its clients with the personal care and attention of a small independent firm, coupled with the vast resources of a major financial institution.
Hi, Neil. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. We had a very nice lunch today.
We did, and I have exciting news to share that I am decorated for the holidays at my house, so I'm feeling good about that.
Oh, I thought you were going to share the fact that you didn't finish your lunch and you gave half of it to Richard.
No, I wasn't going to share that on the air, but thank you for doing so. My 24 days of kindness.
And by the way, if anyone hears chewing, it's not us, right?
Well, we're in studio today with Ken Opplinger, the CEO and president of the Chamber of Commerce here in Santa Barbara. And now on to the articles, Neil.
So the first article is entitled from the Wall Street Journal, Treasuries Feel the Pull of German Gravity.
And I thought this headline.
It's a great headline. And it's, when something happens in the stock market or the bond market, everyone has a reason for it happening. And today, people are saying that the changes in the bond market are a reflection of the new tax bill. But this article says it's not so fast. There are other issues that affect long-term interest rates and short-term interest rates. And what they are talking about is the fact that there is a continued aggressive monetary stimulus taking place in Germany and in the euro states. And that is causing a ripple effect across the U.S. because as interest rates remain low in euro countries, our interest rate is becoming
starting to rise, more
attractive. So there are, people will be talking in the next couple of weeks about, which, again, if you could predict interest rates, you would be lying on your own island somewhere. So don't listen to me. But I would suspect that interest rates are going to rise now because of the prospect of higher deficits caused by this tax bill. But it also is a part of the international effects of other alternative investments in money, which in this case is the euro, is less attractive.
Well, and it just goes to show that we really are a global economy. As one nation or area has lower interest rates, you're not confined to your own country. Yes, you do also have that currency risk if you do invest abroad. But it's something to definitely keep in mind as you go out there looking for investments.
And speaking of the economy, the tax bill was passed by the Senate, as we all know, on Friday, and so there is still some issues based upon reconciliation.
And still,
another word I can use is realization of what they've done. And so they're going to be thinking it hard about during the reconciliation process of some of the implications. But what I think is interesting about this article is entitled, The Economy is Humming, But Businesses Aren't Borrowing. And this article is talking about the fact that third quarter, U.S. banks hit the lowest level of lending since 2013. And I find that really a very important leading indicator. And that is if the stimulus that the Republicans expect from the tax bill had some prospect of happening, then why is lending down in the third quarter?
Well, part of it, you know, when I look at this and I say, I haven't obviously had a chance to read the bill and all the ramifications that the tax
Neither
reform,
did the Republicans.
Well, right, at this point. But at the same time, when I look at this, the real issue that I think it is that corporate America isn't borrowing, that there isn't a real need for more stimulus. And maybe our guest, Ken, you could help us shed some light on this, is, you know, really looking at as corporate America isn't borrowing, why provide more stimulus to an already very stimulated economy, and what's it's going to do to the inflation side of the macro economic look of the U.S.
Well, what I hear from the article is this idea that businesses aren't borrowing, but I think the question is it are they not borrowing because they don't want to or because they can't? Now, from a corporate side, I think you're right. I think there's probably less borrowing going on, but I think for most small businesses, what they find is actually access to capital is even more difficult with all the changes that we've made over the course of the last, almost 10 years since the last downturn in the economy. So I think, especially if you talk to local banks about local folk, you know, businesses wanting loans, part of the issue is that they're just not able to lend in the same way that they used to lend.
By the way, I'm sure Ken is glad that we had told him that during this first segment he wouldn't be called on. Diane, I'm sure he appreciates.
Hey, I like to keep people on their toes.
Right, so Ken gave a really good answer, not knowing he would actually have to answer something.
It's okay. I'm used to that. I have meetings with politicians all the time.
Well, that too, actually. You're married. Exactly. I have to say the next article I really enjoyed. It's called Ignorance Certainly Isn't Bliss for Investors. And this is this weekend's Wall Street Journal. And it begins with a study done by Pew, which asked 1,900 people what they believe their retirement plan cost. And 68% said they were at least somewhat familiar with the fees their plan charges. However, only 25% actually read their plans. And then the next sighting was a study by the Anderson School in Stockholm that did a review, that it did a survey, and they said to a group of investors, imagine that interest rates on your savings account was 1% per year and inflation was 2%. After 1 year, how much would you be able to buy with the money in your account? And obviously the answer is less than today. Only 38% of those people who asked that question got it right. And so what the article is saying is that people tend to overestimate their knowledge. And there's a professor at University of Michigan that did a study, and actually they named this syndrome after him. It's called the Dunning-Kruger effect, which is the state of being ignorant of your own ignorance, which I think is great. What they've concluded is that people who, and this is probably true for other areas, not just the stock market, that people who invest in general believe they're much better at what they do and have much more knowledge about how to do it than they actually do. And that's one of the real problems in investing, which is one of the reasons which I think is one of the great statistics of all times, that in the last 75 years, the average mutual fund investor did worse than the average mutual fund. Now, think about that one for a minute.
Right, and part of it is always doing the wrong thing at the wrong time, and it's part of that emotion getting the better of you instead of, you know, staying invested, or you're always chasing last year's returns.
And speaking of doing stupid things, this last article is entitled "A Thirst for Returns Encourages Risky Trade," and this article could have been written in 2007. And what it is saying is that there is an increase, a substantial increase, in lending to private equity and hedge funds who want to buy assets that really can't be valued, including fixed income markets that are for pools of European bad loans, large property deals, and other, you know, sort of questionable investments. What they're finding is in a search for higher yield, there is an increase in the securitization market for what would have been considered junk in 2007, 2008. And, you know, it's just like history repeats itself, but right on the you know, the back burner. There are people today doing things that are very, very similar in a scary way than what we saw in 2004 through 2007.
I think the reasons behind it, though, are different. The reasons behind this one is that they're willing to do anything for increased yield. They are trying to make up for the fact that interest rates are so low. And they're willing to do something like that, more collateralized mortgage-backed securities that are junk but being rated higher. They're willing to do disaster bonds like we've talked about a few weeks back. You know, people are taking on undue risk. And some of it, I think, is because they don't even realize that it is risky because they're blinded by the higher interest rate. And I often say, if it seems too good to be true, it normally is. You need to be able to identify why you're getting paid a premium for something or why you're getting paid more interest than what you could get on the normal market. And what is that excess? Identify what that excess risk that you're taking so that you truly understand Hurricane Harvey hits and you lose all of your money, what that means.
Well, as our friends from the University of Michigan said, it's very difficult to be ignorant of how ignorant you are.
And I think, we're going to hear this line for the next year.
Yes, I love that line. It almost is worth reading the Wall Street Journal just for getting lines like that. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
Rich is just a really, really, really good guy. The term good egg isn't enough to describe him. He's also certified organic and free range. Rich puts the cap back on everything. The toothpaste, the olive oil, the shampoo, everything. He lets his 10-year-old nephew beat him at virtual tennis, even though he can straight up slay his 10-year-old nephew in virtual tennis. When the toilet paper is running low, Rich replaces the roll on the actual holder, not just on the back of the toilet. Rich is texting and driving. Rich? No. What are you doing, Rich? I was just telling everyone how great you are. Texting and driving makes good people look bad. Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending since 1988, a mortgage banker and direct lender that believes in providing in-depth loan consulting to its customers in a personalized and honest manner. And we can be reached at 564-1290.
And every time I talk to Kelly or think about Kelly, I can't get over the fact that they can do that full pre-qualified of a potential home buyer. And it's as if you can compete against cash the same as you would if you were making an all cash offer. And I have to say, for Santa Barbara, you know, I hear often that people lose out on the opportunity of home ownership because a cash offer came in and the sellers choose the cash over the loan.
Kelly is the manager, for those who aren't frequent listeners, of Cornerstone
Yes,
Home
Kelly
Lending.
Marsh at Cornerstone Home Lending. Yeah. So, you know, I think that that's a remarkable product and worth checking out. But anyways, I digress. We have in studio with us Ken Opplinger, who is the president and CEO of the Chamber of Commerce in Santa Barbara. And thank you for being here with us.
My pleasure.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. You're a relative newcomer, but you've been with the Chamber in Santa Barbara now for 4 years. Mm-hmm. So, but Santa Barbara standards, just so you know, Neil and I are still newcomers.
Oh, yeah. No. I don't ever expect to be considered a long-timer here.
I moved here in 98.
Oh, well, see, so there
and
you go.
And I still get told by the...
not quite yet.
Yeah, exactly. You're close, not quite yet. Yeah. Getting there, but not quite yet. So so tell us a little bit about your background, where you came from, and how you got to Santa Barbara.
Sure. So I'm originally from Tempe, Arizona. Went to school up at Willamette University in Salem, Oregon. My father reminded me a little bit before I was graduating that when I graduated, I was off the payroll, so I better have a job. And
parents are so good at that.
Aren't they, though?
That's my advice I give them. Off the payroll.
Off the payroll, that's right. So I was in my second semester of my senior year. I poked around, and I ended up getting the job of running the Chamber in Gold Beach, Oregon, which I started 2 days after I graduated from college. And I've been in this business 25 years now. Just never got out of it. So
wow, so your first job out of
college was running a little tiny chamber. Yeah, the city had 1,500 people. And the chamber, I think, had like 125 members. So,
wow, yeah. that's rare to have that it immediate
is. Exactly.
job.
Exactly. And so I got to sort of, it was trial by fire, learn on the job. But I've been doing this for 25 years now, here for almost five. Before that, I ran the chamber up in Bellingham, Washington for 10 years. And prior to that, I was in the Central Valley here. I was in Visalia, California. So have really enjoyed the career and working with businesses and communities across the West Coast.
So how would you say that Bellingham, which has a very strong tech community, and we have a much more early stage tech community just with what's going on here in Santa Barbara, what would you say the similarities are and or differences?
Well, actually, the tech community in Bellingham is actually more like it is here. Bellevue, Washington, which is just over the lake from Seattle, okay, is where you see Microsoft and all these other companies that are out there. Bellingham is a little bit more like here. And I think there's, from an economic standpoint, there's a lot of similarities. The cities are actually roughly the same size. The service areas, again, are roughly the same size. We served all of Whatcom County there. We served the southern part of Santa Barbara County here. So from a size standpoint, there were similarities. And from an education standpoint, Western Washington University in Bellingham is not as big as UCSB, but it's now the second largest university in Washington State. They've got 15,000 undergrads at it. So there were a lot of similarities, again, on the water. The big difference is that the climate here is much more amicable, especially to someone from Arizona who, if you go 9 months and don't see the sun, that's a bad thing. And being up there for 10 years, I sort of had my fill
of that. I wasn't even going to ask you that question because it's so obvious. Well, we're glad that you came.
Thank you.
So since your time in Santa Barbara, what do you find to be the most exciting part of our economy that's here?
Well, we've got several different aspects of the economy. Obviously there's the things that sort of lead it here. We've got a pretty substantial hospitality base here. We still have the fact that you've got the higher education institutions, and that drives a lot of the economy here. But we have some things that are, I think right at the forefront. The startup community that we have here that continues to grow and expand, and the spinoffs that we're seeing from that is very exciting, and we're seeing lots of great possibilities out of that. And we're starting to see some infrastructure put into place that's going to help some of that happen and hopefully stay here, which is, it's always great when you've got, a research school like UCSB and all the wonderful things that come out of it. What's even better is when you can sort of have those things continue in second and third stage to stay here in the community, provide jobs here. We get to reap the benefits of that. And so I think we're starting to see that happen here now, too.
Can you explain a little bit more about when you say you're starting to see some of that infrastructure? What do you mean by that?
Well, the Impact Hub is a good example. I mean, we've always had, I shouldn't say always, we have for a while now had opportunities for businesses that wanted to be able to sort of incubate here. But I think with Impact Hub, you see sort of one of the first efforts where we've got, investment going into providing easily accessible and expandable space for companies that want to get started. Plus sort of that back end help that they need, the different aspects of everything from the core parts of running a business to experts in whatever field that you're in and working with you on some of that. UCSB last year, not in 17, but in 16, was able to, through an effort that we actually helped lead, receive a fairly substantial amount of money from the state over the next 5 years, where they actually are now putting the infrastructure in place to be able to help a lot of these spin-off companies there, too. So I think you're starting to see some of those things come into place. And because, you know, those efforts are here to be able to take the entrepreneurial spirit here and turn it into businesses, I think you're then more likely to see people want to keep those businesses here as they grow and expand.
On that point, though, the both the House and the Senate tax bill is calling for the elimination of state and local tax deductions. How's that going to affect California in general and Santa Barbara in particular?
I think it's going to affect us in a very detrimental way. You know, it's we are, if I'm not mistaken, we probably have more more people in California who write off what they're paying to the state from their federal taxes than any place else in the country. And, you know, given the fact that we have fairly high property values here, given the fact that, you know, there's a lot of things that play into this, I think it's going to be a problem. We already know that there are business owners who are, you know, being encouraged to go other places where it's cheaper to be able to run your business, and this is just going to make it that much worse.
And you take a look at, you know, they and you combine that with a lack of affordable work housing, and you look at businesses like Sonos or Deckers, and you say, you know, at some point they're going to have to maybe keep their headquarters here, but they're going to have to start thinking about attracting people by giving them the opportunity to live in a state without state and local taxes and with affordable housing.
Well, but I think there's other plays. I mean, I think in some sense you're right, but I think there's other plays for us here. I mean, one of the things that we like to do is ensure that people sort of look broadly at the region and not just at Santa Barbara. So for a company like Deckers, if they actually want to do more production here, there's a wonderful play for them in Santa Maria where you still have the state tax issues, but property values are much, much less. You know, you've got less transportation issues. You have a lot of things that sort of play to being able to locate some of those other some of those operations in other areas. So I think we're still working under the idea that we can help companies bypass some of those other things by looking at different opportunities here in the region.
Now, how do you see with that? We spoke about that emerging entrepreneurship in Santa Barbara and the infrastructure build out that's happening. How do you parlay that into chamber membership? Because when I look at the chamber, you know, it's a great resource. I know my business, we're members in the effort of full disclosure. But that newly startup tech culture doesn't really lend itself to that. The chamber's kind of an old guard of business.
Right. And I think there's a couple of things that we try and do, and we certainly haven't perfected it yet. But you know, the first thing out of the bat is that we've reached out to different key places in town where we know entrepreneurs are getting involved and trying to get them to find access to the chamber that way. And you know, since we mentioned already, Impact Hub is a good example. So Impact Hub has come in at a level of membership with us that every member of the Impact Hub can actually come in at a discount. So we sort of push that as a way to get in, to try. At some point in the future, if they grow and expand, if they move out of the Impact Hub, they'll become, you know, full paying members then. But at least we're getting them involved in that way. So there is that. But I think the other thing is leading with what we do. You know, part of the reason that I was brought in was that we wanted to make sure that this organization was being an effective voice for the business community. And so, you know, one of the things to note with entrepreneurs is they're always concerned about, you know, once they start to get the business going, how are they interacting with, you know, government entities that have say over what they can and can't do. We play such a vital role there that I think we can make that connection and help them sort of figure out the processes they have to go through, find the ways to be able to deal with some of the issues that they face.
Gotcha. So,
and you talked about Santa Maria. I almost felt like you're giving something away to Santa Maria, but you represent Santa Maria too. I mean, what is the border of your domain?
So our service area is Southern Santa Barbara County. But we're very clear that we think that the whole region benefits regardless of where you go. So, you know, if Deckers, for instance, decides that it's easier for them to do an expansion in Santa Maria rather than maybe move lock, stock, and barrel someplace else, I think that's a win. You know, if they've got operations in Santa Maria, yes, people may locate there, but some may locate here because they want the more corporate style housing. I think we all benefit regardless of where in the region folks are going. So, I mean, some may look at it as giving away. We look at it as a retention method to ensure that businesses can stay and grow here.
You're listening to Money Talk on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station. We'll be right back.
If you have trouble handling your anger, get help. If someone you love is hurting or scaring you, get help. There is a full-service domestic violence agency in Santa Barbara County, which offers emergency shelter, counseling, transitional housing, anger management, and teen outreach programs. Its name is Domestic Violence Solutions for Santa Barbara County. Call their 24-hour helpline at 964-5245. Domestic Violence Solutions for Santa Barbara County, putting an end to domestic violence.
Did you know that domestic violence sends more than 500 women and children to emergency shelters every year? There is a place where all family members affected by domestic violence can get help. Domestic Violence Solutions for Santa Barbara County, with four 24-hour phone lines to help. In Santa Barbara, call 964-5245. In Santa Maria, call 925-2160. In Lompoc, call 736-0965. And in Santa Ynez, call 686-4390.
This is a test to find out if you know it all when it comes to children. Time starts now. Name one of the leading killers of U.S. children age 1 to 13. What's the best way to protect children in a car crash? At what age and size should a child start using a booster seat? Where can you find the answers to these questions?
Car crashes are one of the leading killers of U.S. children. Many of those deaths could be prevented by making sure that kids are in the right seat for their age and size. Don't assume you know it all when it comes to car seats for your child. Go to safercar.gov/the right seat and know for sure. That's safercar.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
And if you're just joining us, you're in for a treat. We have Ken Opplinger, the president and CEO of the Chamber of Commerce of the Santa Barbara region. Thank you for being here with us.
My pleasure.
And so let's talk a little bit about the Chamber in terms of what is the Chamber's mission. What is your purpose? Why should people join?
Sure. Well, so first and foremost, the Chamber of Commerce is here for the business community. Our job is to be their voice and their representative. We're not a government entity. We're a private nonprofit entity that's owned by our 800 or so members here in the region. They pay us an annual dues to be able to belong. And the work that we do essentially is divided into five areas. We work on promoting a strong local economy. We promote the community as a whole. We provide opportunities for businesses to network. We're an advocate for business, and we get involved in political activities to support the business community.
So now, in terms of the advocacy role, do you have a group of people that in the office that does the research and comes out with positions, and how does that work?
Yeah, so every chamber works a little bit differently. There are colleagues of mine out there who've got one or two staff members who just work on the advocacy side. I work a little bit differently. That's actually where my background is. So I provide most of my own staffing for that, and then I've got others in the office who do a lot of the day-to-day stuff in the office. So we've got volunteers within the organization. They're members of the chamber who are involved in our Government Relations Council. They're involved in everything from when we're endorsing candidates, doing the interviews with them, to sort of thinking through things with me as far as issues that are important to us. But I do all the advocacy work directly myself.
Well, that's fun.
Yeah.
Great. And so now, as a member of the chamber, what opportunities do you have to get involved with the chamber?
Sure. So, one of the things that we want to make sure people understand is that, we're doing all this work whether you were involved or not. Now, we have lots of ways for people to get involved. But in this day and age, I'm not selling a health club membership. It's not one of those things where at the end of the year people go, well, I didn't go to any events, so I'm not joining again for a second year. So we do a tremendous amount without people having to spend any time at all. If you want to spend time, we've got a lot of different ways to do that. On the networking side, for instance, we have two opportunities every month for people to be able to network and meet other business leaders. One of them is that we do a breakfast. That breakfast is on the fourth Thursday of every month. It's at 7:30 at the zoo. And so in an hour and a half, we have sort of the speed dating of networking. So you'll get a little brief program, and then at your table of eight people, each person will get a one-minute commercial about their business. At the end of that time, we get everyone to stand up, they move tables, they get another round of that. So three rounds, you'll get 24 new business contacts, plus a great breakfast, and you're out by 9 o'clock. And we generally have enough time at the end for you to meet someone from the zoo. They bring an animal in for you to be able to have a little encounter with. So that's one of the two opportunities. The other one is our business after hours program, which is on the second Thursday of each month. That sort of varies around town. Different businesses host us for those. And we'll get generally about 100 people for the breakfast and somewhere between 50 to 150, depending on the location, for the after hours. So that's just one way that, you know, either first thing in the morning before you go to work or at the end of the day on the way home, you can stop by and do a little networking and see if you can't find some folks to do business with here in the community.
That's a great opportunity to get together, for sure.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And so then in terms of involvement, so there's the social aspect in terms of involvement of volunteering for the advocacy council or I don't know. I know at one point there were ambassadors. And
yeah, we have an ambassadors committee. We've got committees that are involved. For instance, our regional business awards are next month, and we've got a committee that's running around interviewing all the finalists right now for the business awards. So there's lots of different opportunities. And really, we don't sort of limit your involvement based on level of membership. If you are a member of the chamber at whatever level you want to be involved, we'll find a place for you. So we just ask people as we're either working with them on joining or as they're talking about renewing, you know, what would you like to be involved in? Do you want to be involved in the Government Relations Council? Great. Happy to have you on board. We'll get you into the monthly meetings that we have, get you involved in how we sort of oversee what's going on both at City Council and at the Board of Supervisors and make sure that you're an active part of what's happening. Want to be an ambassador? Great. Here's the rules and regulations for that. And if you want to sign on for that, we're happy to have you on board. We're very open to having any member come in.
And so there are membership categories. How does that work? Is it based upon size of business? Is it
So historically, yeah, it was essentially based on the number of employees that you had. And five years ago, we completely changed the program because what we decided was that, you know, there were small businesses that were using a whole bunch of our services and large businesses who we almost never saw. And it didn't make a lot of sense to have people paying based on size. They ought to pay based on the services that they were using from us. So we've redone the model and we now have five tiers. And you essentially buy in at the level of service that you want from us. So the entry level tier is $395 for the year. There's a nice little matrix that shows you all the different things that you get for that $395. There's tiers above that. The highest tier, which is our Business Leader Council, is $2,250 for the year. In addition to all the benefits that you get, there's a bunch of other things like tickets to events that we do and lots of ways that you sort of save on things throughout the course of the year.
And about how many members does the chamber have?
We're a little over 800 right now.
800?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, great. And now, is that primarily how you're funded, is through membership dues, or do you get grants or how does the financial model work?
So our current our budget is just a little under $1 million a year, and the way it's broken down right now is about 40% of that comes from membership dues, 40% of that comes from sponsorships and events and sort of all the ancillary projects that we do, and 20% of it comes either from contracts with local government for service or with other folks in the community we have contracts with for service. So for instance, Hospitality Santa Barbara, which is the lobbying arm of the hospitality industry here. They have a contract with the chamber, and we actually provide all of their management oversight. So, they meet in our organization. My staff is their staff, but they have a different board, and they run that organization separately. So,
on the hospitality side of things, you know, the cruise ships coming through, how does that affect our local business? And is it a net positive? Because I always scratch my head because we're such a hospitality-driven economy, and a lot of it's restaurants and bars, and on cruise ships, you're not usually getting on in port to do those types of activities.
Sure.
What does that do for our community? And
you know, it's interesting. When that program really first started up in earnest, there was a lot of conversation, especially amongst the hotels. Wow, you know, do we really get a benefit out of this? Is this something that we want? Mm-hmm. I think what we found is that it's a great, I don't want to call it a loss leader per se, but it's maybe, we'll call it a great marketing opportunity for the community. We do get some initial benefit. What we have found is that each person who gets off the ships is spending somewhere in the neighborhood of $125 a person on the day that they're here in port. So there's obviously some benefit. I like the fact that we essentially have, you know, the largest ships are 5,000. It's about 3,500 passengers, about 1,500 staff. And the staff all can get off too. Each of those ships pays based on the number of people that are actually on the boat, whether they're staff or passengers. So the city gets a little bit of money out of it too. But you know, we do get a little bit of income, and none of those people are on 101 coming into town. They all get to come in by alternative transportation, which is good too. But what we've found is that a lot of these folks are essentially folks who live on the West Coast. That's why they're doing these cruises that are in this area. They're doing the 3 or 7 day cruises that sort of are here in Southern California. And what happens is they come here and they spend a day here. And they do a little bit, but they can't really do everything they want to do. That causes them to come back and stay in hotels and maybe extend their stay to 3 days or 4 days. So it's that return trip that we're finding more and more is where we're really benefiting from. And the hoteliers are seeing that. And so I think that's why you have such broad support for the cruise ships, because there are other ways that we're finding benefit off of them.
Interesting. Now, in terms of the new hotel that's finally come on, the Hotel California, and that, you know, it's been vacant for the last, 12 years or something, and now it's coming online, do you see that the economy or demand will consume that inventory, or will we see some price fluctuation or price pressure on the downward side due to vacancies?
No, I think at this point, what we're probably seeing is that there is a demand for that, and I don't think you're going to see a lot of that. You know, my colleague Kathy Jagadikes at Visit Santa Barbara really gets into the weeds on some of these things, and she can probably give you a lot more information on that. But I think from my perspective and sort of knowing what the market is like here and where we're seeing rates, I think you're probably not going to see a lot of downturn. I think you're going to have to see a couple of other properties come on board. For instance, the new property out just past Montecito, you know, the new hotel that's coming in at, you know, out just past La Cumbre. I mean, all these different properties. We just had a new property come on in Goleta. As these properties all start to come on board, then you might see a little bit of a fluctuation. But our occupancies are so high as it is that I don't think you're going to see a lot of price changes, at least initially.
Yeah, in Goleta, there has been quite a few new hotels coming online. And Miramar, it is being built. I just saw it today. But it's been talked about for so long, I'm not sure the number of units there will really have a huge impact.
Right, and I think, you know, it also depends on the business. So a property like the Hotel Californian or Miramar, you know, and then the ones we already have, you know, in both Goleta and here that are at that higher end, that's a little bit different than I think the properties we're seeing coming in Goleta, which are providing us sort of business class rooms that we really don't have quite as many of as I think other areas of our population size, because we've had all these other more destination style properties.
Right.
So I think what you're seeing is that to some extent you might see a bit of a price change there, because you've got a lot of properties coming on board that are just serving the average Santa Barbara and aren't sort of destination resort style properties, which, you know, are a whole different game. So.
Right. They're more catering towards that business traveler or that the parents' weekend at UCSB or something along those lines.
Yep.
Yeah.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Star Jasmine Music serves over 3,600 people per year. By providing a safe, supportive environment to explore music, you'll find a place that resonates within. We teach songwriting and how to play a variety of instruments. We have a Pro Tools state-of-the-art recording facility and provide opportunities for teens and young adults who show passion for music and demonstrate talent to record their work. This experience has been known to better one's self-esteem and often leads to development of skills in business and self-management. We have special programs for at-risk youth, as well as the mentally and physically challenged. When ready after a 10-week series, we record our students and give them a CD to show the fruit of their efforts. This experience leads to self-confidence. Visit us at www.starjasminemusic.org. Star Jasmine Music. Sharing music exploration through teaching and recording.
My name is Lola Silvestri, and I'm going to be 95 this year. I spend a lot of time in my backyard. I feed the birds and the bees. I love my flowers. The color in my garden keeps the pink of my cheeks. I was very independent and thought I could take care of myself. I fell and I had to have Meals on Wheels. I love them. They're my savior. And I look forward to volunteers because they've all become my friends.
It's Meals on Wheels.
America, let's do lunch.
One in six seniors faces the threat of hunger, and millions more live in isolation. Drop off a hot meal and say a quick hello. Volunteer for Meals on Wheels by donating your lunch break at AmericaLet'sDoLunch.org. This message brought to you by Meals on Wheels America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arnaldi's Cafe, one of Santa Barbara's oldest and most intimate restaurants since 1937, located on the corner of Olive and Cota Street in downtown Santa Barbara.
And we're in studio today with the president and CEO of the Chamber of Commerce Santa Barbara Region, Ken Opplinger. So we've talked a little bit about what the chamber does, and part of it is the advocacy arm. So what issues are you researching now or that you see are facing Santa Barbara that need to be addressed?
Sure. So when I first got here, I did what I called my 100 conversations with Santa Barbara. And when I reported back out from that after about 3 or 4 months, the top three, and they still remain the top three today as we talk to our members, are transportation infrastructure and specifically getting the 101 project done as quickly as possible, dealing with affordable housing issues here, and homelessness issues, and specifically vagrancy and the problems that we see on State Street because of that. You know, other things come and go. We were very involved and continue to be involved with Edison on the infrastructure things that they're doing.
That's been driving me crazy. Every turn, you're like, oh, no.
I can't go that way. I think there's a lot of other things that sort of come and go, but those are three of the really
core.
Big issues that we continue to deal with on a regular basis.
So let's take them one by one.
Sure.
And let's start with the homeless issue or
sure.
the vagrant issue that's on State Street. What are you advocating for there?
So from our perspective, where we really need to move at this point is along the lines of what we heard from Angel Martinez during the mayoral campaign. It is time for this community to actually do something we've done before. Go back 40 or so years to a time when this community came together and put a plan together for State Street and what we wanted to see happen there. Because the State Street that you see today is a direct result of that broader community discussion. You know, the infrastructure you see there with the brick sidewalks, the narrow streets without the parking. The fact that you've got an entertainment area that's sort of on the north end of that with the different live venues you have. All of this sort of stemmed from that conversation. And it's time for us to do that again. Because I think that the fix that we have for all the problems that we see on State Street has got to be something that's more holistic. While we do need to address the vagrancy issue, it's not just, getting more active on enforcement, which we obviously agree that needs to happen. We've got vacancies downtown that have happened for a wealth of different reasons and remain open for a wealth of different reasons. I think there's still conversations about, what we do with a building like Macy's and the changes that could come from that. So it's time for us to have that conversation. From our perspective, one of the key things has got to be residences. It's time for us to look at State Street as a neighborhood and to ensure there are people who are living there so that it isn't just folks who are working there during the day and then folks who come for entertainment at night and leave. We need people who are there 24/7. This is where their houses are, they're shopping there because this is sort of part of their neighborhood. And I think as you look at options for buildings like Saks or Macy's or even the second floors of a number of businesses along there, moving towards a way where we've got, more housing for those folks, we deal with the affordable housing issue, will also help to address some of the problems downtown.
And yet, one of the problems I see, and it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it does prevent you from building in the places that we think, and I agree with you, make sense downtown, is the Santa Barbara way of developing. So there was this story in Newshawk last week about a developer who was asking permission to build a mixed-use project on, I think it was
De La Guerra
mm-hmm. Street. And everyone apparently liked it, but some of the public comments were, it's going to take light away. And I'm thinking, there's always going to be somebody that's going to say something that they don't like. And, we have this sort of very strict way of approving property development. And, when I first came here, I lacked some of the energy I had in New York. So I used to, for an hour, watch Channel 17 to get my juices flowing when I watched the Architectural Review Board once say to someone, you have to change the window shapes. And the guy said, well, it's down a 90-foot driveway. No one can see it because the trees are protecting it. And they said, well, the trees may die one day. So, if I'm a developer and I'm watching that show, I'm going to pick San Luis Obispo for my next development.
And many people have. No, yeah. I think you're absolutely right. Look, this place is what it is today because of all of the wonderful effort that has gone in by generations of people before us. And I don't think we can ever suggest that that we don't benefit from a lot of that effort. But I also think that there is no question but that the pendulum has now swung too far the other way. And when we have folks who are trying to provide the sorts of things that we're asking for through the AUD program, for instance, and provide more dense housing that is more affordable, and we run them through the ringer that we do, and we run them through something that most communities don't have. I think a lot of people in Santa Barbara who have been here forever don't know that in most places, having a committee that gets to argue with you about the paint color of your building is not normal. Like, you don't generally have committees of people who just get to sort of randomly come up with the way that they think things should be done and impose that on you. That's not a normal thing. And so I think we need to find some ways to be able to continue the great traditions we have here and yet acknowledge the fact that it is too difficult to do things. And I'll tell you where I think housing is going to be at. And the reason I think that is because in this last session of the legislature for the first time in a long time on housing stepped up and said, cities, especially on the coast, you're not meeting the requirements to house the people that you need to house. You continue to underbuild when it comes to housing. And so we're going to come in now and tell you what the rules are going to be for granny units, and you're going to accept them. And I think this is the first shot across the bow. And if cities like Santa Barbara want to ensure that they can have local control of these things, they need to sort of look at what the legislature has done, because I think you're going to see more of this as we continue to try and figure out how we deal with the cost of housing.
Okay, so let me ask you the follow-up question
with
one word, water.
Yeah.
How is this consistent with the fact that we don't have any water here?
And I look at that and I see Goleta is really building, you know, hotels and units and great on one hand, but how in a, now we're going into the sixth year of a drought, can we sustain that?
Look, if we were looking at massive new single family housing developments with 10,000 square foot lots, I would be absolutely with you, because those we know you are huge water users. When we're talking about a three-story apartment complex, the amount of water is infinitesimal when it comes to sort of the existing water use we have. What we have to sort of acknowledge is that we've built these businesses here, we have these jobs here, it is incumbent upon us to house these people here. And so if that's the case, this is actually the better way to go, because the water usage is so much lower when we do these more dense projects in selected areas, preserving the neighborhoods that we have. But that's the way that we actually meet the goals that we have and still deal with the fact that, you know, we are in a drought and we'll probably be in one for the foreseeable future.
And, you know, to play devil's advocate here, when you buy something in this town and it's such a large number that you're paying, you kind of feel entitled to say, hey, they're taking my light and I want it back and I want it to be denied. And so I can see both sides of this story, and housing is a big issue. And I do think that the State Street, you know, adding in some more housing there is true. I live very close to State Street right downtown. And we don't have any of the issues of homelessness on our streets, and it's only a block away.
Sure.
So adding people having a neighborhood feel where they feel responsible for their stoop, if you will.
Right.
I think will make a big difference.
Well, you know, if you look at...
Is it zoning that we need to change?
Just to some extent, because I think that part of it is also where we densify and where we don't. Now, I am absolutely convinced, and no one will ever, I think, dissuade me of this, that there are large parts of the city that we don't want to densify any more than we currently have. So don't get me wrong. I'm not saying, you know, build a three-story apartment complex all the way over the city. But there are certainly places on transportation corridors in areas that already have multi-story buildings where I think we can put more housing in and do it in a way that's going to provide some of these affordability issues. We're not going to go into certain neighborhoods and do it. I certainly wouldn't advocate for that. But I think we need to acknowledge the fact that cities around the world work when they realize how they can constructively densify and ensure that people are able to live where they work, and we don't either have long commute times or expand out. Now, we don't have to worry about the expanding out here, because that's not going to happen.
It's finite.
But we already have 15,000 people a day who are commuting from Ventura County to work here. We know there are more and more people who are looking in the north part of the county to commute here. At some point, we need to acknowledge the fact that, are we going to house all those people? No. But I think it's incumbent upon us to do what we can to both house them and ensure good transportation options. And I think in some respects, we're not really doing all we can in either.
So how you know, a lot of State Street is owned by wealthy individuals who, I don't want to say don't need to, but it's not their primary purpose is to make money on their property. And with individuals like that, it's very difficult to have carrots and sticks to get them to build a second story. You know, there's a new structure, newly renovated structure, that the second floor was an option but not taken. So you couldn't even impose that kind of residential opening that up to
right.
other people. How do we deal with that? Because that, I think, is unique to a Santa Barbara-type location.
Well, I mean, it is and it isn't. I mean, it's unique if you're trying to compare our downtown area to a mall. Because with a mall, you got one property owner, you're going to sort of curate the whole thing the way you want, and it's all... Here we got over 100 different property owners on the extent of State Street, and each one has a different way that they sort of look at their property. And so you're right, it's difficult. But it's not unique in that sense. I mean, if you go to Rodeo Drive, it's the same way. I think what we need to do is to actively work on ensuring that those folks are involved in the planning process. And not all of them are going to want to. You know, there are family trusts where, you know, the last member of the family hasn't lived in Santa Barbara in three generations, and they, all they know about the property is it's an income stream for them. And a lot of those folks aren't going to participate. But enough of them will, and enough of the brokers in this community will, to help us put a plan together that's going to help them get folks into those properties, to get the income off of them to a point where they can reinvest, where they can do the things that we want them to do. Right now, we aren't there because I just don't think we have a vision as a community. And so there's not really a way that we're all pulling in the same direction to bring State Street to where we want it.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
It's a fact. Successful wealth management is built on strategies that focus on the big picture, take a long-term view, and establish deep and valued relationships. Hello, I'm Diane Duva, founding partner at Arlington Financial Advisors, Santa Barbara's trusted family guide, empowering you to make more informed and confident decisions. At Arlington Financial Advisors, we bring order and balance to your financial life by monitoring and managing risk so you can focus on your work, family, and enjoying the moment. We are a fully independent firm offering strategic financial planning, estate and tax planning, and private money management. Our plans and portfolios are handcrafted using a rigorous and disciplined approach, supported by a consistent yet highly personalized client experience. Our clients look to Arlington Financial Advisors as a home away from home, a comfortable place to protect what they've accomplished while they prepare for what comes next. Please visit arlingtonfinancialadvisors.com or call me, Diane Duva, at 805-699-7300.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
So Ken, you know, as we are in our last segment, let's talk about what your outlook for Santa Barbara business in this coming year looks like. What is the chamber thinking?
Well, I mean, you know, on the one hand, I get paid to say wonderful things, so my outlook is very positive. I think there's still.
I love when people are honest.
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, it's full disclosure. But you know, I do think that there's some things we need to work on. Like I said, we need to work on the downtown area and what we're doing on State Street. You know, continuing to address affordable housing issues. Transportation infrastructure is a major issue, whether it's employees getting to work or even moving products in and out. So there's a lot of work that has to be done. But what I'm happy about is that more and more in this mayoral election, I think. Was a good example of it. You're seeing the business community step up, be more involved, understand that if we want change that is going to be positive, is going to help us, that we have to be the cause of that change. We can't just assume that others are going to be involved in that. So I think we're heading in the right direction, but we're going to continue to roll up our sleeves. We're going to work with this new council and do what we can to try and ensure this is as business-friendly a place as we can possibly make it.
And what... How can we, types of things can we do to drive more business to Santa Barbara?
Well, I mean, I think we talked a little bit from the development side. We've got to make it so that a business can actually come in here and build something. We've got to make sure that when they do come and they do the budget, that it doesn't double or triple during the course of building that, because they're going to tell other folks, which are going to dissuade folks from coming in. But I also think that we can do some things ourselves. You know, if we, for instance, in the downtown core, if we have a plan, if people sort of see the vision, they're going to want to be a part of that. We can go out to corporate entities that, you know, may want to help us by coming and being a part of that themselves. They see the benefit. So I think it's ensuring that we have a story to tell and putting the effort into going out and telling that story to others. It's something that Santa Barbara has never done. It's not something we never had to do. It's time for us to start marketing ourselves and trying to become what we want, because we're actually causing it to happen.
Thank you, Ken. You know, we appreciate you being here. We appreciate all the work the Chamber does. We only touched on what you do, and obviously we need to have you back at another time.
Anytime. My pleasure.
You've been listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.
It's